Well, there's a number of things that, as always, that I want to share with you from the gospel reading. And this particular story, I think, is extremely significant. Of course, the entire Bible is extremely significant. However, it's the story of the Transfiguration. Often, this time of the year, it gets lost because everybody's wondering, what am I going to give up for Lent? let me just give you one piece of advice about that. I'll give you some more later. But just off the bat, don't be like my friend from seminary who said, I'm going to give up beer for Lent, so he only drank ale. You know, don't do anything like that. Okay? We'll get to that later on. I he may have become a bishop, I don't know. Nonetheless, I want to point out what I think is one of the key dynamics of living a Christian life today. It's embedded in this story, and it comes out specifically from a voice from heaven. I mean, how can you miss it? So, but there it is. So I want to underline that, and let me just illustrate that this morning by pointing out something about crime novels and fantasy novels, ghost stories, these kind of things. I know a number of you read these books. I know this. You have admitted it to me. I've seen it in your eyes. There's a very specific point about this, and there's a couple of authors I want to point out to you. And I just need to check my list because...
I don't know them by heart.
I'm admitting I read these things, but I don't know these by heart. End of the 1800s, end of the 1900s, the genre of science fiction and crime and mystery and all that was really taking the shape that it still has today. And it was there were authors then, and then it took another step in the 40s. With C.S. Lewis and Tolkien and Dorothy Sayers. And Dorothy Sayers similar crime novels and all that, as well as an astute theologian. C.S. Lewis and Tolkien and all those were committed Christians, deep theological works that they did also. The generation previous to that, that started the crime novels and so forth, in the way that we understand them today, were people like this. Auguren and Blackwood, Arthur Machen, A.C. Benson, M.R. James, Sheridan Le Fanu, and H. Russell Wakefield. They all were widely read mystery, paranormal, as we would call it today, authors. And there is a particular dynamic in each of these authors' lives. That is, I think, here it is. Arthur Machen's father was a very prominent pastor in England. Protestant pastor, well-known throughout the country. A.C. Benson's father was the Archbishop of Canada. It's right. M.R. James' father was a prominent priest of the Church of England, known well throughout England in that day. Sheridan Le Fanu's father was a very prominent priest of the Church of Ireland and held a national office during that time. Le Fanu, although lived in Dublin, so had some Huguenot ancestry, important to us. H. Russell Wakefield's father was Henry Russell Wakefield, who became the Bishop of Birmingham. One of the largest dioceses in the Church of England. Do you see the thread? All of them were the sons of very prominent pastoral fathers who held a national office of significance during that period, the late 1800s and the early 1900s. And they all wrote ghost, crime, or mystery stories that survived to today. Now, one question is, why did that happen? What was going on with that? And I learned this from my friend Paul Zoll, who was my supervisor when I was in seminary, very creative guy, and so forth. And he pointed this out, and I think it's right. In addition to these authors having a gift and talent for writing, and just sheer creativity that needed to be expressed, they were each finding a way to come out of the shadow of their fathers. And the way that these authors did it was that they created a parallel universe, if you will, in which they could express the creativity they felt for whatever reason could not be expressed otherwise in their lives. So they made this world of paranormal crime and so forth, where they could express not only a creativity, but a bit of who they were as well. So feel free to read these crime novels and so forth, but if you want, I do. And what you start picking up on is, what does this person do? What does this author do? Why do I like it so much? What's going on with that? And part of it is just the enjoyment of it and appreciating the creativity. And I try to mine these things for what I like to call cultural artifacts. I can get going on that quite a bit, especially if I'm talking to Larry. We're gone for a while. Nonetheless, is there something about your feeling as a significant person that you're searching for? Is there a shadow you are trying to get out from under, whatever, real or imagined? That could be the case. You probably have friends. And I'm saying probably in a generous manner. I'm almost certain you have friends who look at your church going and at least think the church is an oppressive organization. And it will keep you under its shadow. And they are gone because, if they ever went to church in the first place, because they're looking for a place where they can have their own significance and not feel as they can fit some kind of organization or come under some kind of ideology that is nothing. Now, if you and I, of course, don't feel that way, we experience a great deal of freedom and healing here, and we see Christ in each other. But you can get to a point, even in the church, where you start thinking, I'm stuck, I'm unrecognized, I need to come in and do what I have to do so the church can keep going. We've got to do the best we can so that we can get people in, so that we can fill our committees, so that we can get the offerings up. It's easy to go off that way, and it is a very short step from there into thinking, we are really not significant. It doesn't matter who we are. Where the truth is, which we see in the story of the Transfiguration, is it matters a great deal more than we can know or imagine to God. We gain our significance from God. In fact, what God wants to do is to begin restoring you into the place that He has created for you so that you can be everything you were created to be, not only for yourself, but for those who are around you. That there is something, if you you'll get the opportunity and it starts coming clear to you, throughout your life there has been something flowing, a stream of living water flowing right up to now and flow into the future, which is you, which is what you were created to be. And what we really desire is when you come to this table and you start relating to these people around you and others, that stream, that thread is magnified, emphasized, and released into its significance, and you know that God has chosen you, and you are that. Now the place, the manner, the way in which that comes to us, each and every one of us, is hearing the voice of God. Now I know I've told you that before, but here it was in the gospel. The voice from heaven actually says, listen to him. So I chose the voice from heaven to listen to today and then share with you. The significance that comes from engaging with, hearing, receiving what Jesus tells you, the voice from heaven, is a restoration of your significance. Now, how does that work? Well, we can look at Peter here for a second. Peter and James and John are there, and they see all this, and it's got to be very captivating for one thing. You know, they're far away from everybody else, and they're there with Jesus and so forth, having some new time with him. And then these three Jewish guys see Moses and Elijah show up. Very significant. Very significant. You know, it's like a little kid having Santa Claus show up or something. It just kind of bowls them over. And there's James and John are taking it in quietly. Thinking, wow, all right, isn't Jesus from dazzling white and all this? And they're talking with Jesus and Moses and Elijah talking about things, about the, actually the Greek word is Exodus, Jesus' Exodus, where he will be going to the cross and crossing. They're talking about all this, and James and John can barely pick it in. Peter starts talking. Nobody's talking to him, but he starts talking. And what does he want to do? He's got plans. He wants to build some buildings. He's look at this. This is what we got to do. We got to get some buildings up here so that we can keep coming back. And oh my goodness! All right, so he's in the middle of talking and making his building plans. You wonder why he was chosen like as the first bishop of Rome. He's making building plans. We look to him for all kinds of things. So there he is, and the voice of God just interrupts him. Thank you. And Peter, as you saw in the readings today, mentions it here. You know, he shares it in his preaching around in Mark and Luke and others pick it up and write it down. And then Peter puts it again in his own epistle, which we read this morning also. Word for word, he heard from heaven, "This is my son, whom I love, in him I am well pleased. Listen to him." So Peter, to his great credit, started listening. He slipped back a couple of times. At the time, he chopped off the guy's ear. He was very impulsive. But he began to catch. And Peter needed that desperately. And part of his reactivity was that he was put down most of his life. He was not in a profession that was respected. He was greatly disrespected. And one of the reasons he was greatly disrespected was he couldn't make it to the synagogue regularly. His job kept him from getting it. Some of you know about that sort of thing, don't you? You know people whose job keeps them from getting here. Now in those days, there's a lot more disrespect for that sort of thing. And in fact, as I was thinking about this and thinking, isn't that something? God chooses shepherds to announce his birth, and they were very disrespected because they couldn't make it to church either. And then he chooses Peter, couldn't make it, and he's doing all this stuff. Incredible. We'll get into that some other time. What is important for Peter here is, you know, that he feels that disrespect. He feels what it is to be put aside. He knows what it is for people to just not care about what he's doing because of who he is. And then when this voice from heaven comes and says, "This is my son, whom I love, in him I am well pleased," an echo starts within his soul. And he knows that it's not only for Jesus, but it's for him too. And it's for him very deeply. And things start happening. Drawers in his heart start opening up. light starts shining all the way through, and he knows that he is loved by God. So, a little bit after that, you know, a very short time after that, is the night of Jesus' arrest. And Peter, as you remember, denies Christ three times. And during that evening, when that's going to happen, one of the things Jesus said to Peter is this: Simon, Simon, he starts referring to him in his old name. Satan has demanded to have you and sift you as wheat. But I have prayed for you. And when you have turned, go and strengthen your brothers. At that point, one of Peter's lowest points, Jesus pours into him the significance and purpose of his life. To strengthen the brothers. Strengthen the church. Peter knows what it is to start feeling the palm of Satan's hand coming along. And he knows what it is to have just the word of Jesus releasing from that. And then he knows what it is to turn to what God is calling to and begin going in that direction and see the fruit. And that is what he begins giving to the whole church. From this fisherman who was in a despised profession that no one respected, to that of the word of Jesus. Well, it's easy now to think, well, you know, that's great. That's me. Well, not us. How does that work for us? Well, it works in a similar way. And it really is a discipline, putting yourself in the position to listen to Jesus. Just to simply listen to him. We can end it right there, but I know you're going to be asking, well, how do you do that? What's the best way to listen to Jesus? I'm going to give you this morning the best way that you can listen to Jesus. It's the one you can do. That's the best way. I can give you a list, a long list of ways that you can listen to Jesus. And they will be worth nothing. Unless you do. Then the one you did is the best for you. Now, if you really want to get spiritually advanced, well, two best ones. You could journal, you could just sit quietly, you could sing, you could read the scriptures, you could ask yourself questions, you could take notes of the sermon, you know, there's all kinds of things. It's the one you will do. By the way, that's also the best Lenten discipline. It's the one you will do. Well, how would I know what that is? Very easy, and I can describe it in two words. Pay attention. God will give you the best way to listen to you. You can go to God and say, well, God, how do you want me to listen to you? And then, pay attention. And what comes to mind, be there. Now the part of doing that as power is that you have the presence of God with that discipline. It's not you thinking, well, I'm going to give up chocolate. And then about 18 hours in, your sugar addiction is so strong, the craving begins. That's you. It's when God says, I need to do it. Wherever that is, for however long that is, it could be a really short time. See, here's how this works, or doesn't work. There are no five steps to listening to God. There are no keys to the master listeners of God, of course. I don't know if you noticed that in the gospel, in the text that we were reading, the very last thing the voice from heaven said, the Father said, was, listen to him. There were no other steps provided in the list of our possibilities. Now you'll find that that'll start happening with things in your life. As you catch the voice of God, so, okay, and you start doing that, it'll start spreading in different areas of your life. And things that you want to step into, know about, deal with, you begin getting that ability, that discipline to hear the voice of God, to pay attention when there's other things going along and the chaos starts rising. When you've begun paying attention to the presence and voice of God, you begin to notice that the Spirit of God does hover over the chaos. And you are able to connect with the Spirit of God no matter what the chaotic situation is. You can begin doing it. Now, I'll tell you a little pamphlet secret about me. If you come and tell me something, I'll tell you what I'm really thinking. One-on-one, I won't say this to you, but right here and now, I'll just, if you come and say this to me, you know, John, I've been praying real hard about this. If you said to me, what I'm really thinking is, I'm talking at God. And then what I'm really thinking is, you're not going to hear it. You're not going to get an answer. At best, you might be buttering God up so that he'll do what you want. There really is no praying hard and holding your breath and I don't even know how to pray real hard. You just pay attention to his presence. And you start hearing this. You are my child. And you are my Lord. I have chosen you. I will never leave. I will never forsake you. I will never give you up. I will walk with you. Through the fire. Through the water. Through all of it. And you start hearing that. You take one step closer into the place where you hear God more completely. And when you hear God more completely, you begin to catch your purpose, your love, why you're here. You begin to know what it is that God gave you that drives you. You begin to desire that more completely. What we're going to do during Lent, during Sundays in Lent, is begin seeing more and more how that works. How you have God-given motivations. And how you keep coming back to that anyway. And so how you just ease into that, so that you know that you're walking with God, and God is never going to leave. Even if it's up there, through the fire. See, a lot of times the temptations are praying your heart is because you are going uphill, you are going through the fire, and for some reason people will think, well, if I'm going uphill through the fire, then God's not with me. Can I be blunt one more time? We're Christians here, we don't believe that. That is some other religious system. Thank you for letting me be blunt about that. You will never leave me, no matter what's going on. And if it's not going the way you want, he's still with you. And we'll see how that works. But that will unpack more and more. Because there is a specific way you are formed, which God knew from the womb. And that is the way that he will lead you. And then you can help others do that. Not only your family, but others that you are influencing in faith. Raise up a child in the way that they should go, and they will not depart from it, does not mean straighten out every time you do something wrong. It means seeing the purpose God created them and build them into that, encourage them into that, lead them in the way they want to go. And they will never depart from it. And that's true. Now, what do I want you to do? I'm sure you probably know, but I'm going to remember. Just answer these two questions. What is God saying to me right now? Listen to him. And what is God telling you to do about it? And it's probably something around the topic of what does God want me to do about listening to him right now? What is he saying about it? And how does he do that? Okay, everybody okay? All right, let's do it. Lord Jesus, we thank you that you want